You're listening to the Midday Grind with Martin Kilcoyne and Charlie Marlowe on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Midday Grind, 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. I'm Charlie Marlowe. We have Matt Whitener filling in for Martin Kilcoyne, who's vacationing in Colorado. Just checked in with Martin. Also, Chris Gardner and Brendan Schaefer here inside the studio right now. We go out to the phone lines. We're going to talk a little baseball, trading deadline with Jim Duquette, co-host of Power Alley on SiriusXM MLB Network Radio. MLB.com baseball analyst, SNY television, New York Mets studio analyst and contributor, long resume here, former Mets general manager, 20-year Major League Baseball front office executive with the Mets and the Baltimore Orioles. You can follow him on Twitter at Jim_Duquette. Jim, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're doing really well here. What's it like for you? We're all baseball junkies, especially this time of year. It's fun to check Twitter. You get the updates on your phone, trades right. being made. This is kind of the fun time to be a baseball analyst.
No, it really is, you know, especially from my front office days, too. You know, I mean, the conversations that are taking place, the trying to match up, you know, what the team's needs are and teams that are selling, what's the value going to be, you know, for the players, you know, trying to figure that part of it out. Did they overpay, underpay? I mean, it's fun. To me, and, you know, there's a lot of rumors. There's still probably, I don't know, 50% accuracy when it comes to the rumors out there. When you see things out there, and you're like, man, that doesn't even make sense. You know, usually it doesn't, and it's being written out there. But that part of it, you know, it's what drives the sport at this time of the year. All that information, whether it's, you know, accurate, partially, most of it I'd say is partially accurate. What you're trying to get is 100% accuracy, and that's never the case.
Jim, let's start with the biggest move so far, and who knows, maybe it'll be the biggest news of this whole trading deadline with the Cubs acquiring Jose Quintana for four prospects, two of their top prospects. What did you think of that move? It seems to make a lot of sense for the Cubs, not just 2017, but in the near future as well, having the control through 2020.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest key, guys. You know, when Quintana is, you know, their pitching has been suspect here for a good portion of the season, a little bit of a hangover effect from last year, but I you know, there's some age to it too with Lackey. They've had the injuries with Hendricks, and so when you look at what they needed, you know, and Theo Epstein kind of outlined that blueprint not too long ago. Their president said, hey, you know, the majority of our improvement's going to come within the clubhouse, and he's right with the position players and some of the starters. But they did need a starter, and listen, I think they might even go out and get another starting pitcher, believe it or not, that they can control. Quintana, obviously, they can control, as you mentioned, through 2020, but they may go out and get a guy that they could rent for the last part of the season, too. I don't, you know, I'm hearing mixed reports. Sometimes you hear Sonny Gray is a possibility, and others, you know, within the organization that I've spoken to are concerned about his health. But they're going to be aggressive because that's, you know, they're heavy in the position player side and a little bit light prospect-wise or, you know, organizationally depth-wise with their pitching. So I love to trade for them. They gave up a heavy price. Both those guys are really, really good, especially Eloy Jimenez. I love the kid as an impact type of player, position player. But, you know, again, they're not really worried about the prospects at this point. They're trying to win another championship.
Jim, we'll stick around the NL Central, and just the Brewers have a comfortable lead, a 4.5-game lead coming into today, but a lot has been said about are they going to be able to sustain that if the Cubs begin to put the push on that I think a lot of people believe they could have, if the Cardinals were to make a move, and some even have some belief that the Pirates have a run in them. What team in the division is it most important makes a move at this point in the season, whether it's sending guys out or bringing somebody aboard?
Well, I think there's a couple teams in the division. Like for me, Pittsburgh's more of a sit and hold, and let's see what happens when Starling Marte comes back. I think he comes back later this week, and see what they have. They have a lot of young talent. There's not a ton of guys that they can move. that are having good seasons, like Justin Wilson's a guy that teams would have interest in. So, you know, when you look at it from that side of things, you go, wait a minute, not Wilson. Who's the lefty I'm talking about?
Tony Watson?
Watson. Wilson's likely to go on a move from Detroit. But Watson, but he's not pitching all that well. So you go, you know, who else? They're not. I don't get the sense they're moving McCutchen at this point. They took temperatures out there with teams in the wintertime. They got a sense of it. They're not going to get back what they want. He's been swinging the bat a lot better. They're going to, I think, make another run at it for next year. So I think they're going to hold. St. Louis is interesting to me. Milwaukee's interesting. I think Milwaukee can add something, a pitcher in particular, veteran starter. They've been looking at Sonny Gray as well. In fact, I think the Cubs made a preemptive move on Quintana, because I think Milwaukee was kicking around on it. They're a team that they're dangerous because they have a strong farm system. They're not going to go all in, we'll call it, but they are going to be, I think, more aggressive because this is where they are in the standings. So I think they're a team that absolutely they need to make a move, and I think that they will. And you know, the Cardinals, the sense right now, you hear a lot of the same words out of John Mozeliak, the organization, arbitrage. If they can make a move to get better, you know, now and in the future, they'll do it. Those are hard trades to make. They don't want to give up a lot in their system. I think it's going to be difficult for them to do, and I think more than likely, you know, they don't do much. Maybe they move Lance Lynn at some point, if they fall back even further. So Cardinals need offense. We know that, but I don't get the sense right now that they have anything in the works, at least, you know, at the moment.
We're talking with Jim Duquette, co-host of Power Alley on Sirius XM, MLB Network Radio. You know, obviously St. Louis lives and breathes Cardinals, always want the Cardinals to win. It seems like with the fan base, though, for this year, 2017, you know, I see a lot on social media, a lot of fans who are thinking reasonably, do you really want to make the big ad for 2017? Does this team, you know, if you add one piece, are they all of a sudden going to be a wild card team or a division champion? And I think a lot of people think that's not the case. So how do you try and build for the future? If you were the president of baseball ops for this team, if you're John Mozeliak or Michael Gerst, what do you think, you know, are the two or three pieces that this team really needs? It seems like there's a lot of solid players, good prospects in the minors, especially pitching and outfield, but they don't have that shortstop. They don't have that number three or four hitter. And as you said earlier, how do you get a guy like that this day and age in these marketplaces where everybody wants to get those guys? And you see what a guy like Adam Eaton went for. You have to give up the whole farm.
Yeah, you do. And I think the one thing that if I'm in the Cardinals' shoes, listen, that guy, that middle of the lineup bat, he's not really available via trade at this point. I mean, I think J.D. Martinez. I wrote an article for MLB.com recently that mentioned that St. Louis, if they were to get back in this thing a little bit, get above 500, and you know, if they were to make a move, he'd be a really good fit for them in a corner outfield. He's also a guy, by the way, that if you wait till the free agent period starts, he would be a good fit there also. So, to me, I would make a blitz for him if it's not now, this winter. But some bat, as you mentioned, you know, it's unfortunate. Listen, they have miscalculated the last two seasons when you look at it. You know, they thought their offense was going to be better last year, and their defense overall, both haven't been good for now, you know, a year and a half for the most part. So, you know, that's going to take some doing to improve offensively. It's going to cost some money this winter. I think that has to be their priority, number one. They always seem to find the pitching. They always seem to have it. And so I'm not as concerned about that. They miscalculated on Brett Cecil. We all know that. We can kind of beat the drum or pile on if we want, but you know, the bottom line is they've had more success than failures. It's just lately they haven't had that same type of success. So offensively, I don't know if there's an animal out there they can trade for at the moment, that would help them for the long term. And so that might be the best course is to sit it out, wait till the free agency, and then spend the money that way.
Jim, I'll put you back in the GM seat. If you're sitting in the position of a franchise like the Cardinals and you have a surplus of talent in one area, the Cardinals have that to an extent in starting pitching in their system, but also right in the outfield, how big of a push do you make at this point to advertise those guys and say, listen, we'll make multiple moves in order to pick up a roster like this because you have that depth of prospect there?
Well, listen, if you have a lot of, you know, starting pitching, most of the time, you know, that dries up on you fast. I've watched the Mets and follow the Mets. Obviously, I was an executive there for a long time, and I do the pre and post for them, too. And you know, they thought they had eight starters, and now they're down to four. You know, if they're lucky, with a lot of the injuries, and they bounced back a little bit lately. But you know, that's the thing with the Cardinals is, you know, they've always been built, and I think in the National League you're always built on good pitching overall and good starting pitching specifically. So with the Cardinals, you know, I'm hesitant to trade much of that depth unless you know you just have a ton of it, and you know it's hard to get. It's hard to get major league ready bats for a starting pitcher. You might have to dip down to double A or triple A and wait a couple of years on that. So that's the thing for me. If for you know a guy like you know, let's say if you were to dangle Lance Lynn right now, he's considered a middle of the rotation starter. Most teams would love to have him pitch game three of a postseason. Yeah, the price tag for him, you're going to keep it as high as possible, but he's still only a rental. You know, and so you know you might be able to get a high end prospect at double A that can help you at the major league level in a year. So, you know, that's where, you know, if I'm the Cardinals, yeah, that, I don't sneeze at that, you know, especially because they do have some depth. That's where I look at it and go, okay, I'd move that piece before I would trade a piece that you have control for 4 or 5 years.
So, Jim, I get the sense that maybe you think that the Cardinals are a team that doesn't need that big overhaul, but, I mean, it's more or less about getting what you can that's left from in this roster.
Yeah, well, so, no, 100%, I agree with that statement. This is a team year in and year out because of the fan base, because of their success, because of what they've done. They're a team that's at, you know, basically win now and win next year type mode still. And I don't agree with some of the places that kind of go to these complete breakdowns. You know, what the White Sox have done been pretty interesting, but it's been a couple of years of throwing bad money after bad money. I don't think the Cardinals are in that spot for me yet. You know, if they do another year of not making it to the postseason, you know, we might be having a different conversation a year from now at this point. But for me, they're still built to win, you know, this year and or if not this year, next year. And so, yeah, I think trading a couple of those parts that are going to be free agents at the end of the year, that's the move that I would make. And I think I really do think that that's what St. Louis, that's what the Cardinals front office is considering too.
We're talking with Jim Duquette, 20-year Major League Baseball front office exec with the Mets and Baltimore Orioles. What are you hearing about these three Marlins outfielders, Christian Yelich and Carlos Stanton, Marcell Ozuna, of course? I think Cardinals fans would take any one of those guys. And sure, Everybody a little different. Obviously, Giancarlo Stanton has the huge contract. Yelich, you have all the control. Nice deal, 7 years, 50-ish million. Marcell Ozuna not making the money yet. You have 2.5 years of control there. What are you hearing about those guys? And also, it just seems, if you're reading the tea leaves with this sale of the Marlins, that they want to basically unload everybody. Do you think that's actually going to be the case before this trading deadline?
I don't think everybody, but I do think what they're going to do is any of the guys that are making a lot of money, high salary guys, they're going to make a priority. If you're going to move, let's say if they want to move Stanton, which is going to be almost impossible with that contract. I mean, this guy has $290 million left on his contract over, the next 10 years, I think it is. You try to package him with a real good player like Christian Yelich. They've seen a couple of proposals out there. One of my colleagues at MLB Network Radio, Jim Bowden, suggested potentially St. Louis as a fit there. I don't see St. Louis paying that kind of dough for Stanton personally, even if it does include Yelich. Philadelphia was recommended. Why would Philadelphia want to put that commitment into a guy like Stanton? Hey, he's a good player, but he's also injury prone. That contract was a bad one in the instant they signed it. So I'm very, very skeptical that they're going to be able to move Stanton, even when I see reports out there that there are several teams that are interested in him. I think that's more drummed up by the Marlins, personally. So I think Martin Prado, to get back to you, your conversation, D. Gordon, Edison Volquez, guys that have made money that have a little – you know, and Volquez hasn't been great, but those are the guys that have value. You want to throw Ramos, A.J. Ramos, their closer. He would have plenty of interest there. But I think those are the guys that you'd be likely to see move. If I'm a new owner, I don't want any of the young, controllable talent leaving the organization. I want to make that decision on my own when I get the keys to the club.
So the Cardinals going into this week, they've got a big series going up against the Mets here. It's going to be kind of, I think it's a turning point for them here. If they come out of this series and they're still kind of at the same level here, do they have to go into mode where they have to explore things, not just Lance Lynn, but also looking to see what they can move just in general at this point?
Well, I think that front office will do that for sure. Like I think you take the temperature out there of what you can get for any of these guys. I think you know the interesting thing when you look at around you know the price tag for let's say just recently the A's made the deal with the Nationals, right? They traded Ryan Matson and Sean Doolittle, and they got back Blake Treinen, who's a quality, let's say seventh, eighth inning guy, and they got a pitching prospect who I actually like. I saw him back in high school. He's in low A ball, but you're going to wait 4 years before he's ready because he's coming back from Tommy John. Like that, that's what you could get for two experienced relievers. So the cost. I think you certainly, if you're out there trying to shop, let's say a Rosenthal. I don't think you can get quite that, but you could certainly give it a shot and see what you can get. You can't get much for Cecil. I don't think I would trade O if I were in their shoes because you have them under control for the next couple of years. So, who else would you kind of throw out there? Segrist, limited value. So I think that you start there. Obviously, we talked about Lynn. And outside of that, there isn't a ton of guys that I would make available, because they're underperforming or they're going to be a part of the club next year.
Jim Duquette, one more before we let you go here. You obviously worked with the Orioles. Your cousin Dan still works with the Orioles. So Right. Maybe you have some inside info, but Manny Machado always talked about, could he be traded? What's the likelihood that he would get dealt, you think, before free agency next year?
Well, before next year, there's a possibility. This year, I don't think it's likely at all. In fact, I would almost bet that he won't be traded. I don't think they're trying to win again next year. They're kind of in a similar situation. They've had success over the last 5 years, 6 years. They're trying to win. This year has been horrible on the pitching side. So they'll move a couple of relief pitchers, maybe Britton, but likely Brad Brock and Darren O'Day. But Manny is a guy that I think if you're not in it next year, and by the way, he's not having a good season, right? The first half was awful, so the value on him is down a little bit. I don't see them moving him. It's not the time for it, and I don't think their ownership group would let him do it. So I think if he's traded by the end of next year, I do think there's a better than 50-50 chance if they're not in the race that he's traded at the deadline.
Jim, really appreciate the time as always, sir. Look forward to talking with
you
again.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks. That's Jim Duquette, co-host of Power Alley on Sirius XM, MLB Network Radio, MLB.com baseball analyst, SNY Television, New York Mets studio analyst and contributor. So breaking down the series here that starts tonight, Cardinals and Mets in New York. Also a former Mets general manager. That was 2004, 20-year MLB front office exec with the Mets and the Baltimore Orioles. You want to follow Jim Duquette on Twitter. It's @Jim_Duquette. Good stuff right there. Matt Whitener, and it sounds like he's not thinking the big move is coming for the Cardinals.
Yeah, it's hard for me to envision how that would happen currently where they're at. It's hard for me to think, but I think that based on some of the comments that the club has made, they're looking at this year and next year as kind of a collaborative effort, looking at trying to put the best team that they can put out there, obviously all the time. But it seems to me almost like they have a vision on 2019 at this point, where it's see what we can accumulate over the next couple of years, whether it's a move right now, whether it's in free agency. But I don't know. You'll never be in a position in this town where you can just say, we're rebuilding. What if we decide they're refreshing? That's going to be allowed for too long. But I think they're just kind of at a point right now where you move what you can. Like Jim was just saying, you move what you can and get back just anything of any type of value to sort it out.
And also, expectations are so high here in St. Louis, as they should be. It does seem like sometimes we talk about the team as if they're 20 games below 500. And they're not. So it could get worse. And I know I've been saying it way too many times, but you could be the Giants this year where you're already way out of it.
Yeah.
And you were way out of it. And you're not even thinking whatsoever about 2017 at all. At least with the Cardinals, it's still pretty interesting here, at least until the trading deadline, to see what they're going to do. And again, it's not a total rebuild. You have so many solid players. And I think if you were to break it down, you have A players, you have B players, you have C players. It seems like this Cardinals team has so many B-type players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just need, and you have an A-type player in a Carlos Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
You need that B-type, you need that A-type offensive guy that you can put in the 3 or 4 hole. And you need a shortstop. And I really think, even though it's not easy to get those guys, even if you were to get an Anderson Simmons, it's going to cost a lot to get someone like that under a ton of control. Brendan Schaefer saying, let's do it. But it seems like you could make this team, you know, markedly better with just a couple of those moves. And again, it's not easy to make.
Yeah.
But I think everything else falls into place. You have a lot of defensive issues where once you have shortstop figured out, okay, all of a sudden, third base, second base, Colton Wong healthy, things fall into place. You have a ton of outfielders that have a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
And you can package a couple of these guys, a starting pitcher or two. You're not going to be able to have nine starters.
No.
And you already got guys under control next season. And the Flaherty's of the world, the Alcantaras of the world that have a lot of value. We don't know how these guys will pan out. You can't use them all anyway. You need to use what you have a surplus at to get something back where you don't have. You don't have that shortstop. Maybe Delvin Perez, what is he, 3 years away probably?
Yeah, he's, what, a freshly turned 18 right now? Like, I know guys are getting to the league a lot earlier now and making their impacts a lot sooner. But, you know, in the meantime, you've got to have somebody that can play that position. Those are the important positions. You've got to be solid at shortstop. I think that that's been one of the biggest Achilles heels for this team this year is that they have not – that Aledmys Diaz was not able to replicate what he did last year again. He just didn't do it. So now you have an issue where in center field you haven't been able to call on the guy you planned on as often as you could. You have to have the same issue at shortstop. To his defense, I think the usage of Yadier Molina has been better this year. I think that they've done what they need to do there. But you're going to have to make a sacrifice to shake up the foundation of this team to accommodate bringing in that A-level player. Because you have a lot of guys, in my mind, that are just kind of stalwarts. You know, despite the fact that Jed Jerko's had a great year, I don't think that they're going to curve off any plans to upgrade the team at third base off of what he's done. All due respect. But I mean, if you look at the corner outfield here, you'll be hard-pressed to find a team that's gotten less production from two critical power-hitting positions than the Cardinals have. They have to address that one way or the other at either one spot or potentially both.
And with both Grichuk, who's coming off the DL soon here, Piscotty just placed on the disabled list, but at least for the next 5-10 days, it is pretty obvious with who you have on the roster right now. It just makes total sense. You have Pham, he's playing. You have Dexter Fowler, he's playing. And again, it's early, but right now, Magnaris Sierra, you have to play him until he gives you the reason not to play him, especially with the fact that the other two guys are on the disabled list right now. But as you said, they invested in those guys, you know, money with Piscotty, but also Randall Grichuk with the trade. He has all the talent, first-round pick, but we've heard that for many years now. He's had some stretches where he's been very good, but at this point, I think everybody now is okay with, all right, Randall Grichuk, he's had his shot here. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not a fit here. If you can move him and get anything in return, it also frees up a spot, that at this point, it probably makes sense. And sometimes guys just don't work out for whatever reason in one spot. For example, Matt Adams, he did have his opportunities in St. Louis. Now, granted, he did not have near the playing time that he's been getting with the Braves, where they basically set him up there, said, you're playing first, you're batting here, and we've seen him go crazy now with the Braves. He did have his opportunities here. Now, it was a more of a pinch hitter this year, but I'm talking about in past years.
No, yeah, there was enough years. There was enough time, opportunity there years-wise to see what's there. And I just think that that's like what we were talking about earlier. That's where the human aspect comes into play at. You have to realize that sometimes some places just aren't going to bring out the same thing in a guy that another one will.
Charlie, you bring up your boy, Mag Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay to say that?
Magpipes.
Okay, perfect. Got to play him. I think that's the simple conclusion people have reached, at least while he's up here. We'll see how that goes. But, okay, you're going to play him. You can play him in center, play him in one of the corner outfield positions. But now the question. Charlie,
can he play shortstop?
No, that's a good one, too. Where are you going to bat him?
And I did tweet this out yesterday. I'm not a big guy on just arguing about pitcher batting eighth. You know, and I think the data on that is pretty 50-50 if you look over the years. And if you listen to Tony La Russa when he discussed why he did it sometimes, when he had Albert as the three hitter in that lineup, Tony basically said, okay, after the first inning, we now turn Albert into a four hitter with your leadoff guy, your second leadoff guy batting ninth. So again, I'm not saying you should do this all the time. I just think with the Cardinals team this year, if Matt Carpenter is going to be your leadoff man, which he is, We all know he's a run producer. He is a doubles machine. Yes, he gets on base a lot. But this is a guy where it seems like to have a guy that drives the baseball like he does in the leadoff spot, it would make more sense with Magnara Sierra on the team to have him, instead of batting eighth, bat ninth in front of a guy like Matt Carpenter.
You know, split that 7-8-9 between if when you get everybody you would like to have there in that scenario healthy. Colton Wong, pitcher, Mag Sierra, turn it into Carpenter and then Fowler hitting for extra, making the extra base hits matter. It's one big argument that our colleague Derek Gould's always had. Carpenter's hits don't account for as much as they should because, yes, he's crafted to be a leadoff hitter, but you know he's driving himself in all the time.
See, this is how you trick him. We talk about where does Carpenter hit, second, third. Oh, you know, he always wanted to own that leadoff spot until Dexter Fowler came along. Dexter Fowler comes along, and he still wants to own that leadoff spot. You got to trick a guy like that. You still tell him he's a leadoff guy, but really, is he your leadoff guy when you have Sierra in front of him?
Ah.
Something like that. If you're gonna keep Molina up in the lineup and you kind of maneuver that in a different area in front of the pitcher, so if you're going to be stubborn in a way to keep Molina in a certain spot in the lineup and not drop him down or put him in front of the pitcher, you benefit yourself that way. You're even tricking yourself
into a better opportunity. Is he the guy that wants top billing with his co-star? I just want my name mentioned first. I don't care what happens then. I just want to have my name mentioned first.
I saw Charlie tweet it.
I was just
throwing an
idea
to me.
I was thinking out loud during one of the at-bats where I saw them. Then, you know, Carlos Martinez comes up and he gets the base hit. So I totally get that. But if you ask guys that have hit eighth in the National League, they will tell you that it's not that easy. And it could be easier, I'm saying, to hit in another spot in the lineup because of the fact that they always say in the National League, you're kind of facing a lineup of 7.5. Because in certain situations, you can pitch around that eighth inning guy to get to your pitcher. So again, I just think with the unique skill set of a Magnara Sierra, it does make sense, or you should at least give it a try, batting in front of Matt Carpenter and hitting in that nine spot, because you can get to a time where all of a sudden he's on base. Do you want to have him try to steal a base, but then your pitcher's up and he's going to strike out? Or do you even want to send him knowing he could be out, and then all of a sudden you have the pitcher leading off the inning the next time around, and that's not really advantageous for a big offensive inning coming up afterwards.
And this is where Mike Matheny's philosophies can really ruffle the feathers of fans in a way, because there is some stubbornness involved, and he has explained before this year and years past that he's really not going to go that route with the pitcher batting eighth and allowing a position player to bat ninth because, you know, he's been that guy that's batted ninth before. So, in a way, I can appreciate his bias and agenda because I do the same thing.
Mm.
But also, if you want to be completely progressive and open-minded about things, which he has shown at times, which will make some people say, no, he hasn't. Well, he has. He has adjusted and adapted in ways not to necessarily their liking completely, and that's fair. But this is one where it's like, man, it's at least something to try. And there's logic behind it, and there could be, you know, who knows what could come of it. What do you have to lose by doing so?
Well, not anything else other than Sunday afternoon games you're winning in the eighth inning. So
okay. Keep going.
I don't particularly like Mike Matheny's reasoning behind that, with the fact that he didn't like it when he was in that spot. I think that also does speak to kind of the argument we always have on this show, just about numbers and emotions. Maybe Mike Matheny actually thinks, and part of his reasoning is, that when he was in that spot, you kind of lose a guy emotionally. Maybe you're not getting the best out of that guy if he's going into that spot not happy with the fact that he's batting ninth and the pitcher is hitting before him.
Yeah.
Now, I would say with a guy like Magnara Sierra,
yes,
a rookie, I don't think you have to worry about that. When you're coming up to the big leagues in your first year, you kind of got to do whatever you got to do. It's one thing if you're a six-year veteran who's going to be pouting if you're batting ninth. I don't think you have that going on with Mag Sierra.
And also, Mag Sierra would bat ninth because he's fast. Mag Matheny was probably batting ninth because he wasn't that good of a hitter.
Yes.
Whereas it's like a strategical thing for Sierra to be there, like we've mentioned, with the speed and the second leadoff idea.
Either way, it's fun to watch Magnara Sierra. just play baseball on this team. And again, I wasn't here during Whitey Ball, but it was a great era. It was fun to watch. And it's just fun to see a guy like that. Again, I've never been so excited just to see a guy get crappy, weak contact to the right side, but know that once he does that, there's probably a little better than a 50-50 chance he's going to beat that ball out. The second baseman's going to have to glove flip. Everybody's going to have to move twice as fast as they normally do just to try to make a play on a weak ground ball.
The question then for me at this point then is, do we take to the streets and petition? I mean, what do we have to do now? I would think that if I was down there at Busch these days seeing how things were going, I'd be open to, let's say, suggestions. Not from us media folk, of course, but the people. If we can mobilize the people behind this, maybe, just maybe, we can get a lineup that makes a little bit more sense.
A little revolt. I like it. On the text line, if Mags is playing, he has to be in center field. I don't necessarily disagree, but there's another fun thing to watch, and maybe not so fun for the skipper with the fact that Dexter Fowler was paid to be the center fielder. We know he wants to be the center fielder. Remember, when they moved him out of the leadoff spot, even if he wasn't happy about it, he deferred to Matt Carpenter and said, wherever Carp is comfortable. When asked about not playing center field potentially with Tommy Pham, another good defensive center fielder. So again, this is a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
Notice Dexter Fowler didn't say, yeah, I'll play wherever. He did say, no, I was paid to play center field. I play center field.
Playing center field. That's where I came here to play. So.
Oh, well, thanks, Dex. I get it. If I was him too, I'd want to, I mean, center field is kind of like, I don't know. We seen that with the Andrew McCutchen thing earlier this year where he was, you know, demoted in a way. They look at being moved around the outfield as being demoted. Do I think Dex could play other places? Sure. I think he'd be a just fine left fielder. But at the same time, going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, they have to find a different type of production for that left field spot. I need a guy that can't run, somebody that, you know, I don't know, maybe hits close to 325-ish home runs.
Sounds JD Martinez.
It sounds familiar to a former Cardinal left fielder that wasn't necessarily loved as much all the time as you would think. But I tell you what, take a 2011-ish or so Matt Holliday and put him in this lineup. You're looking at a different lineup.
Now, are you advocating that they should have brought him back?
No.
Saying that, or just a guy like
that? Another guy like that. Another guy that can just going to change the way that people are pitched to around him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And for all Cardinals fans, I understand it's very easy. And Matt Holliday was on the DL here. But it's easy to look at his numbers and say, well, why the heck didn't we bring that guy back? But remember, he is a full-time DH.
Yeah.
He's playing first base very, very sparingly. He's 36, 37 years old. We wouldn't likely get that same type of production in the National League, in left field. He's probably going to be injured more. He's not going to be as good as a defensive player. And we know there are issues there at the end anyway.
Yeah.
So sometimes you just have to, again, it kind of goes back to guys make sense at different points in their career in different places. Matt Holliday as a 37-year-old no longer made sense in the National League playing left field for the Cardinals. In a way, as we're talking about Matt Adams, and somebody on the text line says, but you didn't give Adams the shot this year after he did all that work to get into shape, and you have someone playing his position who isn't a first baseman. That's also true, and that's where the move really looks bad, what we saw the last week or so, when they're moving over Matt Carpenter to second base to make way for Luke Voit, and then again you see Matt Adams seemingly hit a home run in every game he plays for with the Atlanta Braves.
Why wasn't Matt Adams in shape like that before then?
That's also a good point.
Oh, he met a girl, and yeah. You know, I think we all can relate to him one level or another, and getting your stuff together for the right reason.
Man, I love this Pilates stuff now.
This is great.
And Matt Adams had his first year. He hit 17 homers. They put him in a great spot to succeed, matchup-wise. I do think if you go back in time and you listen to sports radio around that time, how many people said, well, heck, if you take Matt Adams, you play him the whole season, he's going to hit 35 home runs. And I think it's fair to say that he was used perfectly that first year in terms of being set up to succeed. And again, now he gets in shape. He's a better player. He's doing great for the Braves. I think we all are glad to see that because he's a good guy. It's one of those weird situations because it all goes back to the fact that Matt Adams is a first baseman. The Cardinals tried that experiment in left field. Whoa. He was floundering around. It didn't look good, terrible optics. But then you look at this team and you say, well, is Matt Carpenter, we know he's a first baseman now, but is he your first baseman of the future? He was so much more valuable in that super utility role where his offensive numbers look so much better at second base, look so much better at third base, even though defensively the spot makes sense. It's just one of those things where it's square pegs, round holes, whatever you want to say. They just don't have those guys you can pencil in. Boom, that's my first baseman. That's my shortstop. That's my three hitter. It seems to be a daily, who the hell are you going to play where?
Well, then you've got the small contingent now that's saying, well, we still got a Matt Adams because Luke Voit, and I think they're just looking at him like, well, yeah, maybe there's some similarities there, but that's not the same guy.
I hope that's the case, though. I hope Luke Voit can be that guy. But again, very small sample size with him. Same with Paul DeJong. We all love that series he had where he hits a home run in every game, but you're not going to see that all the time. And I hope he's a guy that's on the team forever. Is he your shortstop for the next 3 years, your bridge to Delvin Perez? I don't think that's necessarily the case.
You have a number of guys that can add to this roster in a limited capacity right now. You need, like you're saying, Charlie, guys that are going to be called upon every day. Not so much shifting, not changing the pitcher all the time. You need to be able to find some of those answers in everyday roles, and I think that even that applies to Matt Carpenter too.
That is Matt Whitener. This is the Midday Grind, 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. I'm Charlie Marlowe. We have Chris Gardner alongside, as well as Brendan Schaefer. Matt Whitener filling in for Martin Kilcoyne, who's vacationing. He'll be back on Thursday. We checked in with him at around 12:30, talking a little baseball with Jim Duquette. Coming up, on the other side of the break, we have the Grinder, and then at 2 o'clock, Dr. Rick Lehman talking about medicine, sports medicine, and the fact that Matt Whitener said that Dr. Rick is the one that got you on this vegetarian, what did you call it, pescatarian kick?
I think I'm saying that word right. I told him it was a plan that I had, and he gave me some advice that initially I couldn't follow, but it's becoming a little easier now.
So we'll break that down, and also I want to kind of just talk to you about what you're eating now and how you're appreciating or not this new diet, because I tried that once many years ago. I'll tell you a quick story once we get to that. But we're going to take a break first. Bertarelli Cutlery. In 1967, Felice Bertarelli started Bertarelli Cutlery in his garage with his four sons. And for the last 50 years, his family business has been dedicated to providing the finest service possible, whether it be knife sharpening for the commercial or residential kitchen, food prep equipment repair, or offering quality paper products such as register tape, to-go boxes, and hygienic gloves. While they have grown over the last 50 years, they still offer the same face-to-face service that has been their trademark for three generations. Bertarelli Cutlery on the Hill at 1927 Marconi or on the web at BertarelliCutlery.com. It's the Grinder coming up next on the Midday Grind. 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.